and this is the Linux Show for March the 25th. We're actually here on the air.
Yay!
It's amazing. We made it after, how long has it been? Just 2 weeks?
Yep, just 2 weeks.
Yeah, wow. Seems like a lot longer, actually. But we're back. This is the Linux Show for the 25th of March. March, breaking it up in the middle like that makes the month fly by. Boy, who would have known 2 weeks ago that we'd be in the middle of what we are right now, huh? That's for sure. 2 weeks ago, the big thing on our mind was how much longer we were going to have to deal with winter. But the weather seems sort of trivial right now, I guess. So, but anyways, we'll bring you another edition of the Linux Show. Hopefully, we'll have at least a reasonable turnout. A pretty small crowd in the IRC right now. It's hard to compete with War Live. That's for damn sure. So we'll just give this a run up the proverbial flagpole and see who shows up tonight and just do the best we can. Doc hasn't joined us yet. I'm going to start paging him over the internet shortly after I start the introductions, but we do have the rest of the crew here. Also out in California with Doc is Arnie. Arnie, how you doing tonight?
Oh, doing fine. Just got here myself. We had meetings at school today, and so I had just barely run into the door and try to get my articles printed off here. And
yeah, interesting time to be a teacher, isn't it, Arnie?
Oh, very interesting. I'm beginning to start down the path of using open source in my classroom. I've got an old Pentium 1 133 that I'm using that is running beautifully, absolutely gorgeous, Debian Woody with a 2.4.20 kernel, and it's running like slicker and slick, and, you know, it's fast, and using an old Diamond Stealth card and a 2-megabyte card, which is just loves Sawmill for window manager, and it's running great.
Excuse me, Arnie. Kevin, could you check the levels for us? People out on the internet are yelling at me saying that the volume is really low.
Yep.
Oh, you know that, huh?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So.
It's been real nice. We've had some budget cuts problems here in California, and of course, you know, one of the ways we could save money for teachers is by stop paying the license fee for Microsoft. Of course, our campus is all a Microsoft Windows 98 campus, which is interesting. We also have some 2000 and NT boxes around, but most of the teachers' workstations are running Windows 98, and very slowly, I might add.
Well, they don't have to renew any licenses on Windows 98.
Well, I mean, that's, I think, why they're saving the money. But, you know, the idea is that it takes an inordinate amount of time to log in. I mean, I log in and I have to basically I go get a cup of coffee and come back. It's that slow, you know. But you know, so you know, the infrastructure is there and everything, and this classroom, every classroom has a computer on the network, but it's difficult. And we're fighting, and I'm putting together some stuff so we can demonstrate what we can do.
Arnie can still hear me. I'm going to try calling him back and see if the connection's a little better while I'm trying to hook up with Doc as well. But Russ.
Please.
Russ, I was looking at this guy, Bruce's name in front of me. But how are you tonight, Russ? And boy, a very interesting time to be living in the Washington, D.C. area.
Oh, yeah, there is such great fun afoot all over the place here. Actually, doing okay. I gave a three-hour talk today to a users group, and so I'm quite tired. But things are going here.
A three-hour talk.
A three-hour talk, yeah. That was...
three-hour cruise. That's a long time to stand up in front of a group.
Yeah. Well, I did have a 10-minute break in there, but
that was easy.
But otherwise, things are going pretty well here. There don't seem to be any bombs dropping over D.C. that I can see, so far so good.
Hello.
Hello, Doc.
Hello.
Oh, hey, God.
Hang on.
Order me a hamburger, Doc.
I'm glad you got me because I can't believe this is working. Can you hear me?
Can I have a Manhattan?
Oh man, can you have Manhattan? Jeez. What time is it? Did I lose track?
It's 3 o'clock.
Oh man, I'm in the wrong time zone. Okay, are we on the internet?
Yeah, we are.
Hi, everybody. Oh my God. Yeah, I just finished talking to Tim O'Reilly, and I'm talking to all these other people. Boy. So where should I start? Give me the outline, and I'll just talk.
Well, Doc, seeing as you are at PC Forum, and you're on a cell phone, and probably, what are you, in the middle of a bar right now?
Well, I just walked away from the bar. So I'm now at the front of the hotel, so that's a much better place.
Well,
I guess I could start with the Intel thing, because Michael Robertson, busted the chops of Intel for not including Linux device drivers of the Centrino in their announcement, and so Esther Dyson asked him about it, and he gave one of those answers of, we're waiting for the marketplace to say, to tell us what to do, and I asked the first question of the whole conference, saying, since when does Intel wait every time, the conference for the market to tell it what to do? Linux is huge in the embedded space, and it's huge in the server space, and there's a lot of demand in the desktop space, especially in enterprises. You're telling me you're not going to include the device drivers with your new chip. What's up? And the guy, he kind of gave the same lame excuse. But then the next day they made an announcement. I don't even know if you saw that, but they just made an announcement that they are including the device drivers.
Yeah, absolutely. The comment I got on this issue from a local guy here in Chicago for Intel was that Robertson caught him off guard, and he basically just didn't have a prepared answer because he was a marketing guy.
Right.
And if the Linux drivers already were there, they were in existence, and they're just not as far along as the Windows drivers were, so they weren't ready for prime time. But the people inside of Intel, at least what I'm being told, have been planning on supporting Linux on Centrino since the beginning. They're not stupid. They see what's in the media. They see
right, and they're using them themselves,
Yeah.
So, and that's, I heard sort of the same thing from several people who said that two things. One was that there really is a kind of a, probably at the marketing level, okay, see, man, a little bit of a fight between, between the sense of loyalty to Microsoft. I mean, the guy said on stage, he said, we have a relationship with Microsoft, and a lot of money is involved, and that's part of it, more or less.
Does that mean that they can't have a relationship with anybody else? Is that what
Microsoft means? Here's really what came out of this thing, and out of this whole conference, which is there's a story you see when you look at the relationship between companies, and then there's a story that's actually happening among the rank and file, and among the people who actually get work done, and it was really, really, really interesting. In the last panel, the last open source panel, actually, that they had, Martin, I'm forgetting his last name, forgive me, who's the president of MySQL, was talking about their business model, which is, they own the code, but they GPL it, and if you want it for non-commercial purposes, you can take all you want, but we're also selling it. It's also for sale, and if you're going to use it for commercial purposes, here it is. And this passes with Salmon, and it's not a problem,
They make money supporting it, too, which is...
They make money supporting it, too, and it's a really kind of simple, straightforward thing. And here's what he said that really sort of resonated with the audience, and especially with me, which is there's a... he said, you know, software where you can see the source code is more valuable than software where you can't. And relationships are worth more than just something that's just laying there. And we sell open source software and free software, essentially, because it's worth more. You know, like Don Marty says, you know, free software wants to be as expensive as possible. And he's really testing that principle. And he's got relationships based on it. He's got a $5 million, they make money, you know. They've got 60 people, and they're a $5 million business right now that's growing real fast, and they have big customers. But where they appeal is they're kind of at the middle level, you know. It's not at the top level. But I had several conversations here with fairly high-level guys at big companies where they're doing all kinds of stuff, but they're just not talking about it yet. The one thing that's really clear, and this is something that comes from the Evans data findings, they, you know, Evans data surveyed like 650 developers or something like that, and I have the numbers there, and it's like, you know, Windows or various flavors of Windows are the leading target platform inside corporations right now. But looking out a year from now and more than a year from now, it drops precipitously, and Linux goes way, way up. There is just no will right now inside of companies to want to continue developing on Windows if they can avoid it. I mean, there are others that say, you know, we've made this decision, we're going to stick with it. There was one guy from a Eastman Chemical Company, he said, hey, you know, we're completely open to it. We're completely open to open source. We're completely open to Linux. But we actually saved money a few years back when we went with Windows, and we went all Microsoft, but we're completely open. But, you know, I even got the sense in talking to him that, you know, there may be skunkery things happening inside their company. But I didn't sense any loyalty there. There wasn't like a couple years ago it would have been, you know, we're locked into this thing, let's not even talk. You know, there are just too many big companies that are making the move. It looked really dark to me for Microsoft, frankly. Really dark. I was surprised at how dark it looked. So, and I hate to keep knocking them, you know, but, you know, it actually had to, there's some Microsoft people here I really like. In fact, one's a close friend who worked for another company that got bought by Microsoft, and he's trying to do all kinds of open standards and open source stuff, and, you know, he's kind of an advocate on the inside of the company. But the sense that I have just personally is that, you know, there are a number of areas in which that's almost kind of moot.
But today, once again, and I know this is actually one of the other guy's stories, Microsoft ran away from open standards again today.
Well, what did they do?
I really don't know. I have to go look at
that. Oh, something. Something. Yeah, yeah.
So, Doc, what's the stuff about identity being the big theme?
There are a great many things for which you can only, you know, that, I'm trying to think of a good place to begin with this. A year ago at PC Forum, just before then, Andre Durand, who is the founder and president of Jabber Inc., Jabber.com, and also Jabber.org, but basically the Jabber setup, came to me and he said, you know, I think what we need to do to get, as he put it, to sort of the implementation stage of Clutrain, to fully empower customers, is to make identity a network service like mail and web service thing. You know, we needed protocols and APIs and other things that were open and standard and widely published and the rest of it. But they more or less take everything that fattens your wallet, all of those things that other companies give you, and kind of turn it around and say, okay, you know, for example, in my wallet, I have my Red Carpet Club card from United, and I have my my credit card with United, and I have my Executive Premier Flying Privilege card from United. None of these parts even talk to each other, right? But they all send me promotional crap, right? And about their partnerships with these and that. What if we turn that around and say, you know what? I'm the one with the money, and I have my relationships with these different companies, and I want to tell each of you who you ought to be talking to. and how can we turn this whole thing around, kind of? And so we had this whole sort of open source way of looking at that. And so he's got just one scheme that he's working, but there are others too.
Elliot, to me.
Well, no, but here's the thing: it doesn't start with a company. See, it's like what standards can we set loose in the world that allow customers to be more powerful and for companies to sort of cope with those opportunities. It's sort of like in the same way as HTTP and IMAP and POP3, created conditions in the world where all email could talk to each other, where anybody could send email to anything, where anybody could look at a web page, that kind of thing. Let's turn loose in the world what Jabber's trying to do with IM. Let's put some standards in the world that everybody can subscribe to, and then anybody can interchange whatever it is with anybody. But the whole idea is to put the customer in a position of power where the big companies don't own it. In other words, and that's what happened with the net. I mean, nobody owns the net. Nobody owns email. Nobody owns, nobody owns web service. Nobody owns Apache. There are no choke points there. But beyond that, we create the conditions by putting those things in the world where companies, in fact, can take advantage of them, not necessarily make money selling them, but take advantage of their presence in the world. That's the idea. And this time, it's not just like one company talking about that. My friend from Microsoft, as a matter of fact, is driving toward exactly that, and he's arguing for that inside the company. And he doesn't even like federation. He wants everything to be peer-to-peer. That's just sort of his vision. Now, how far he's gotten with that, I have no idea. But it's something he's talking about, and his whole theme is, it's not lock-in. Elliot Noss from Two Cows is, I had a lot of fun talking to. And Two Cows, of course, is built on Linux and, a LAMP implementation of some kind. And he was talking about how identity is involved in a lot of different things, and he'd like to see this kind of thing in the world. It would make business easier for him. There was a panel, there were several panels. There's a guy from American Express. And he came up to me afterwards saying that, there's just all kinds of ways that they want to use it in part with what they're doing with Linux. They're doing all kinds of stuff with Linux inside the company. So, it's sort of an idea that where a year ago here, a few seeds were scattered, now some grass is starting to come up. But there's a general sense here overall that the grassroots are what matters, even though the big companies are on stage talking.
Yep. While you were there, when you were talking to Tim, did he happen to mention how plans for OSCON are coming?
I assume they're going well. It's in Portland this year.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, I don't know. I mean, actually, I'm going to see him next at the Emerging Technologies thing. So that's the next event, I think. I lose track of when they all are.
Well, you're always constantly going to things.
Yeah, yeah.
Perpetual state of jet lag.
Yeah. Too much, actually.
Yeah.
Too much.
Okay,
yeah.
Any more stories?
But it's been interesting. Actually, well, one of the guys here said, actually, Avery Lifford of Linux Care was saying that.
Yeah.
The sense at this point is that Linux is actually proven. Linux is done. I mean, as a legitimate thing in the corporation, Linux is not even an argument anymore. It's fully accepted for the most part. But open source is still, a source of a bit of concern. But he thinks within the next two or three years, it's all going to be perfectly acceptable. It's just a matter of maturation in the marketplace. Which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. You going to be able to hang out for the second part and talk about government?
Yeah, here's what I'd like to do. I left my bag where I'm feeling uncomfortable having left it. So, but there's no cell coverage there. What's that?
Want me to call you back in about 20 minutes?
Yeah, could you do that?
Sure, no problem. We'll call back.
Okay.
Back.
Okay, great. Okay. Thanks.
Talk to you later, Doc. Okay, we need to get through all the introductions and... Doc just sort of came in. Russ, do you have any hot stories of the week?
I got all too many of them, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to try to dance through them relatively quickly so you don't lose too much time.
Oh, we got plenty of time.
One that has already been discussed a little bit inside the IRC has been the story, it's on the Linux Show webpage, about Office Depot not selling products that don't have the design for Windows XP logo on them. And they even reproduce a copy of the memo, supposedly, which says, including the following, quote, please be aware that Office Depot is immediately requiring all products that connect to a personal computer and notebook computer must pass these Design for Windows XP logo requirements to be considered for retail distribution through our stores. Now, you know, some people were asking whether that applies to Macs. I don't know whether that from the wording of it, Macs may be immune, but I don't see how.
I don't recall ever seeing a Mac in Office Depot.
Yeah,
no.
But it doesn't appear that that anything Linux would survive that particular test, at least the way they have it written.
The question here, Russ, is more important, is that how does one get the Design for XP logo? Doesn't that require some kind of commitment to XP in the marketplace?
No, it requires you petitioning to the HCL program and getting through all of the conditions required of the HCL program. That's
what is required of that?
The hardware compatibility list program. It is not a case where you have to pay necessarily pay Microsoft millions and millions and millions of dollars. You're going to probably end up paying Microsoft quite a bit of money by the time you get through the HCL certification program. For those of you who don't have any clue of what I'm talking about, the HCL certification program is a thing. How can I put this? It is a clerical way of making plug-and-play work because plug-and-play cost too much to develop in Windows 98, and they wanted to come up with a scheme that was cheaper than what they went through with Windows 98. So to basically make it cheaper, they bypassed the technical solutions that they used in the Win9X development time. And for Windows 2000 and Windows XP, they have this HCL program that the companies have to actually hire Microsoft engineers, and they run through a series of fairly lengthy tests to prove that their products are HCL compliant. And so it ends up costing Microsoft nothing because these companies have to hire Microsoft engineers as consultants. I don't know if that's good or bad. You know, it's a system that Microsoft is using, and that's the process. But in terms of you joining a club, now you don't necessarily have to join a club, but you do end up, you know, I guess de facto paying Microsoft money because you're going through this HCL certification program. But that's beside the point.
Are there enough components on the list that one could conceivably build a Linux box that would pass the sticker?
I can't comment about XP because of the sheer fact that XP is so tainted with spyware. I have never really.
Well, I'm not talking about the software XP. I'm talking about the sticker. The sticker that Russ.
I know, Arnie. Let me finish. I haven't looked into the XP HCL program as deeply as I have investigated the Windows 2000 program. There are lots of product out there that are part of the HCL for Windows 2000 that are also Linux-compatible stuff.
Now, if I take and build a PC, this is a question, Russ or anyone else, if I build a computer out of components on the HCL list, is the synthesis of those components, the summation of those components, also by de facto an XP compatible?
In theory, yeah.
Would it deserve the sticker, or would I have to also go through the process myself?
Okay, if you are a manufacturer, you are treated differently if you are a systems integrator that actually builds the systems out of OEM product, it's the OEM product that has to be HCL compliant, not the systems themselves, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess not.
Okay. But regardless, I don't think it's relevant. I think that this story, I love this story, Russ. I stepped all over you. But I love the story from a couple of standpoints. First of all, it educates us about industries that are completely outside of IT. If you are unfamiliar with the way office supply businesses work, they operate on a completely different basis than your typical retail does. Almost everything in the office supply trade is done by shelf space payment. The wholesalers actually come into the retailer and pay them for shelf space. So somebody within the Microsoft distribution channel has followed that established practice within the office supply industry and has bought the shelf space from Office Depot. They do this with lots of manufacturers. If you go into Office Depot, they have one or two brands of everything. And they don't carry, a lot of breadth of different kinds of brands of product. It's just the way it is. If you want to get into that business, you got to step up to the plate and pay for shelf space. So what are we going to do in a case like that? I don't know if a protest will work.
Well, I mean, the soda manufacturers have been doing this for decades in the grocery stores and getting away with it.
Yeah, and it works because there's only two dominant soda makers in the country.
Well, there's one dominant software maker, and it seems like that they could get away with that, too.
Coke and Pepsi have an unwritten agreement where they sort of take turns having sales. You know, generally they each get 6 months out of the year where they will back off of the other manufacturer's marketing team. But it's a very, very deeply ingrained, corrupt system that has been operating for probably 100 years, and I don't know what to do. I would love to encourage people to go out there and talk to the managers, the store. But for the life of me, I have no clue of if that's going to do. Okay, I'm being reprimanded because of RC Cola. RC Cola, Coca-Cola throws away in a week what RC Cola sells in a year. Give me a break.
There's always burners.
What?
There's always burners.
Yeah.
So is the view from the Midwest.
So, I think this is a great story, but I don't know what we can do about it. This is just such a deeply ingrained thing that I don't know if we can do anything about this until the numbers are already proven by the early entry people, the people like Sam, Walmart, and the other vendors that are starting to come in there. Until those numbers are proven, I don't think Office Depot is going to attempt to look at it because they are under the expectation that somebody's going to pay them for that shelf space.
Well, I think the problem with Office Depot is, and Russ, maybe you'd like to chime in on this one, is how much of the market share of personal computers and this kind of thing does Office Depot have? I never see anybody in the Office Depot store near my house, and furthermore, let alone anybody buying computers. They don't seem to have a lot there anymore.
Well, at least the last one that I was in had a lot of software and stuff like this.
Yeah, they sell a lot of software.
But then again, as Arnie was saying, there seem to be fewer Office Depot stores. I mean, there was one about a 20-minute drive from here, which has since closed. And now you have to drive close to an hour to get to one, which...
I don't think they're doing too well, and I think this thing is going to be, not much of a big deal.
They are probably doing better in the Midwest than they are on the coast, because they are a Midwest company.
Yeah, also they're competing with Fry's out here, and Fry's is probably not out.
There are no Fry's.
No.
There's Office Depot and Staples are the only two companies in the office supply business here in the Midwest, and Office Depot does very well.
Yeah.
Less market.
Yeah.
And again, I, you know, because just because of the way they work, you know, who in the Linux community is going to be willing to pay them when the margins are so narrow? Who's going to be willing to pay them for shelf space? Microsoft is obviously willing to pay them.
Yeah, I think the only obvious thing, at least, if would be to take your shopping dollars elsewhere. I mean,
there you go.
That's
about it. That's a great comment, right?
But you know, that's kind of I think where things are at the moment.
Yeah.
But it is rather amazing to see this sort of thing transpiring even after all the lawsuits and everything that have gone on.
Yeah, and so blatantly out in the open. Blatantly out in the open. And it's like, oh, what can we do about it? I don't know. And maybe it's one of those these legacy things from the Midwest, because here in Chicago, we don't call it graft. We call it government.
Yeah, I think that is a local adaptation.
I mean, but it's the truth. I mean, it really is the truth. We don't call it graft. You know, business payoffs are just an accepted part of life. And it's sort of funny. As they call it, it's the city that works, though. So, got any more stories for us?
Yeah, a couple of quickies. One is a story that can be found over at masshightech.com, and there is a link to it on the Linux Show webpage. And that's about someone who's trying to get the Massachusetts Department of Revenue to transfer from their, I guess it's largely Windows 95 based systems that they have, and trying to get them over to Linux. And for them, it's a financial issue. And the story says that that the person in question here says that he can do for about $200 a seat what the Microsoft products would cost between $500 and $600 a seat. So that's a pretty interesting thing. You know, it's not new for us, perhaps, but if you have a manager who's sitting on the fence, that might be a nice article to shovel underneath their nose. Another one that's good for managerial reading and dispersion is the global enterprises turning to Linux servers. That's over at eWeek, and the link is once again up on the webpage. And this talks about a new survey from Forrester Research that says, surprise, surprise, more and more enterprises are replacing both Windows and proprietary Unix with Linux. Once again, for most of the people hanging out here, this is not news, but it might very well be something good to give to your boss.
So this survey, both contradicts and corroborates Microsoft claims at the same time, so it's replacing both, not one of the other.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, frankly, is I think most of us who've been around realize that, you know, Linux is replacing both. It depends on the situation. And it's actually interesting to find one of these surveys that has actually has at least to some degree some grasp of reality. It's going on here. I mean, I had some reader of my InfoWorld column take me to task, saying, "Well, you know, Linux isn't that big. Look at this quote here from someone from HP Services saying that it's only replacing Unix." And you know, I had to kind of gently remind him that HP Services makes most of its money from Microsoft-based services, still, as far as I know. And they tend not to to irritate their partners by saying things that their partners aren't going to like. So, you know, this one actually seemed to catch at least some of the basic facts of the situation. And And that kind of leads in as well to the two links that are out on the webpage, having to do, once again, with the Evans data thing that that was brought up earlier, and in particular with Nick Petrelli's take on all these things, looking at the data. So that's those two stories are both very interesting. One
Nick Petrelli's article on LinuxWorld.com, debunking the Linux Windows market share myth, is a really good read.
That's very interesting. And then he's got Slashdot has a an interview with him, basically, on similar sorts of things as well.
Linux Nick is one of the Linux stalwarts of stalwart pundits. He's been around a while, and he's been a he's one of the best Linux advocates in the press, and he's been around, and he deserves being a little more airplay, and maybe we ought to get him on some week for.
Well, he's been on a couple times, but
yeah,
we'll get him on again.
Yeah, we need to. He's overdue.
Yeah, the thing that I really enjoy about the information, the propaganda that comes out of Nick's authoring is that he, unlike an awful lot of people on both sides of this issue, really does do the homework and comes up with legitimate numbers to support his arguments, and at least he seems to come up with legitimate numbers. I've seen very few people be able to come up and contradict the information that he's been putting forth. But I agree with you. The article that he just wrote, debunking the Linux Windows market share myth, is a great one. I like what Doc was saying earlier tonight about, you know, the discussions with developers. That was one of the things that was highlighted that I thought was very interesting. That what was the number that that Nick quoted? It's something along the lines of 50% of the developers that are doing Linux used to develop primarily for Windows and now are developing exclusively for Linux, and that's a wholesale shift in the way that the development is doing. So the future product looks real good, real strong.
That's something that that I've discussed a couple of years ago, and one of the drums I've been beating is that, you know, people have been looking at the wrong side of the equation if they're looking at just, you know, clients. And Nick, of course, has picked this up real well. I mean, yeah, it's inevitable that people who are intelligent computer users are going to be wanting to look at something like Linux. Not because Linux is any better or anything, but just Linux has a better tool set, and it's free, and developers who are coming up and coming are going to want to look at that. And the tool set is huge. I mean, Debian comes with almost 9,000, Debian Woody comes with 9,000 packages nearly, within a couple dozen of 9,000.
Way too many.
I mean, you know, hey, it's on 7 CDs, and that's without the source code.
Way too big.
But it's great. You don't have to use it all. You know.
It hurts my head.
Yeah. 9,000, guys. And you know, yeah, but Linux doesn't have any software.
Of course not. Russ, got any more stories?
Yeah, a couple last quickies. One that isn't particularly Linux, but it is open source, and that is that the JBoss project, JBoss group, is trying to get their engine certified as J2EE compliant. And there's obviously some testiness here between Sun and the JBoss people. And apparently Sun has finally decided, after a year of the JBoss group asking for it, has finally decided to supply these tests. And that looks like it's going to be an interesting one to see what comes of it. It would be very interesting to find a Java 2, if they really get it, a Java 2 compliant engine that that is a free engine. It'll be really interesting to see how that pans out. The other real quickie is
Make it real quickie.
Yeah, the other real quickie was that we had covered, I think, in weeks past about this open standards, open source for national and local e-government programs in the U.S. and EU conference in Washington D.C. And
the EGovOS conference.
Yeah, that's the one that there was threats of protests and everything, and it turns out that apparently there was at least an organized and civil protest by about six people that lasted for a few hours. It's kind of interesting if you read the wrap up over on NewsForge, link on the main page. There's even this huge discussion afterwards about who has the rights to the name New Yorkers for Fair Use. It's very interesting, very very weird, and one of those ones that I'm really glad that I'm staying out of on the whole. It does make for an interesting read. So I guess to some extent that conference was somewhat successful, and you do have this business about Microsoft taking the stage, and they had a number of people who listened to the presentation, and according to the report, they were also kind of held to task on some of the things that were said during the presentation. So hopefully that will give people an idea of the difference between open source and this shared source stuff that is coming from Redmond. So that's it for me.
Okay, Kevin, have you got any new product releases?
Yes, Mandrake 9.1 is out today. Just finished downloading it, and I'll be evaluating it and reporting on it shortly. Also, Red Hat 9 is coming out next week. Bad news is with the glibc upgrade, it looks like the NVIDIA binary drivers are going to be broke. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
That's interesting.
So you may not want to upgrade to Red Hat 9, huh?
Well, I'll wait and see what NVIDIA does. They've been actually fairly good about coming up with updates for their binary drivers, so hopefully that'll get straightened out.
Fast turnaround from 8 to 9, that's for sure.
Yep, you know, a lot of things are changing, which I guess is part of the whole deal with them shortening the lifetime of the free version of Red Hat and coming out with the enterprise product. I guess it sounds like they're planning on keeping it more on the cutting edge and coming out with more new stuff quicker from now on.
Okay, is that it?
Yeah, it's just also, I don't think we mentioned it last week because we were off. Mozilla 1.3 final is out, so go ahead and grab it. Spam filtering is pretty good.
Yep, got it. It is pretty good. It is. Been just playing around with it today, as a matter of fact. So, cool. If you've got nothing else, we're going to go ahead and go on over to Arnie. Got any stories of the week, Arnie?
Yeah, a couple of real short ones. One is Red Hat is reporting fiscal fourth quarter and year-end results. And basically, on $25, $26 million revenue, they're reporting they basically broke even, which is probably as good news as in this economy.
In this economy,
expect.
This is fantastic.
I think that's really good performance. I think Red Hat is doing all sorts of things right, and I'm really pleased with that result. IBM, let's see, whose site is this? This is all VNU. There's a article by Lisa Kelly called SMEs Disagree on the Lure of Linux. You can get these things off of...
Do you have the link for that? That is a funny article. I didn't have the link for it on the site. Do you have a link for it?
Yeah, I'll stick it on the IRC, and you can grab it off there. And Lisa Kelly, it's a pretty good little article there. And then of course VNU then spoils everything by what I will name my clueless pundit of the week. Linux lines up its best shot by Nick Booth, published on the 24th yesterday. And this guy needs to get some clue, and it's quite a long diatribe. This is in a print on my fairly short, small print. It comes out as 1, 2, 3, 4, 4.5 pages of text on the printer-friendly format without any headers or ads, just a short header. And it's basically a diatribe telling us everything, why Evans' research data is all right and we're all full of hooey. And I think you guys over in the IRC ought to give this guy get the clue hammer out and give this guy some clue.
Well, what's the URL for that one?
I'll send that one too.
Okay. Anything else?
No, that's about it. We'd like to get on to our next.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and get my story so we can move on over to our guest. Let's go ahead and take a short break, probably a 2 or 3 minute break, and we will come back on the other side with the second half of the Linux Show for, what is it, March the 25th, 2003? We'll be right back, everybody.
Although I've never been to Rio, there's something saying to me, go. 'Cause there's a chance I just might find my big romance there, Rio de Janeiro. Tomorrow I may fly to Rio to find the love I need to know. Someone is waiting for me somewhere, and it could be Rio de Janeiro. Show me how to get to Rio. I need some space to just unwind. There is a real place that is Rio, but with Rio, it's possibly a state of mind. Sometime, 'cause it's waiting there for me.
This is the second half of the Linux Show from March 25th, 2003. We are back. We actually got a whole complete show coming out tonight. Being able to keep the equipment running. Good news.
Oh, don't say that out loud.
Good news for us, huh? After a couple weeks of near disaster, but we've got it all together, I guess, this week. So let's go ahead and jump right into the second segment.
That's an
and bring in our guests. We've got joining us tonight a couple of people who have been actively working on forming the news, creating the news. On behalf of not only people within the Linux community, but the greater public at large, and who I'm referring to is Cooper Stevenson and Ken Barber, both of MVLUG in Oregon. They're joining us tonight to what is going to be the first in a series of shows over the course of the next 2 or 3 months. One of the things that we decided to do, this goes back about 3 or 4 weeks ago in conversations, Doc and I decided that what we're going to try and do is have a whole series of guests talking about state initiatives and try and gather together some information for people to, of the work being done by people like Cooper and Ken to bring to their own state governments. This is a really long, time-consuming process. And people out there can use all of the help that we can give them. So first of all, I want to give you both my congratulations and welcome to the Linux Show, Cooper and Ken. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jeff.
No problem at all. And really, I got to give you, in particular, Ken, I got to give you my congratulations. It's not easy to get something into the form of a legislation, be it state or national, and so just getting that far alone is an effort to definitely be admired. How did you get started on this?
How did I get started? It started with the Peruvian bill. When did that story break? Was it last May?
I think it was about a year ago.
I saw it on Slashdot, and one of the Slashdot posters said, "We need politicians like this in the United States." And I was thinking, yeah, why can't we do this in the U.S.? Then I realized, I live in Oregon. We can do it in Oregon. There's a bunch of us geeks that meet for lunch on Tuesdays, and I said something at lunch about it, and one of the other geeks said, "Oh, you need to talk to Phil Barnhart. He's open source friendly." I'd never heard of Phil Barnhart, but when November rolled around, we have a tradition in my county of a party election night at the fairgrounds. All the local politicians show up, all the media show up, and quite a few just general members of the public are there, where we watch the returns on TV. The TV people go, newspaper reporters, everyone goes around and interviews all the politicians. And it's just a good time had by all. I knew that Barnhart would be there, so I made a point to meet him and mentioned the bill to him, and he only had 3 words. "Let's do it."
Ah.
Red Hat was going to be coming to Portland a few weeks after that on their big road tour that they took in 2002. I went to that, not realizing that one of the guys on the road tour was going to be Jeremy Hogan, who is the contact point at Red Hat that deals with legislation. When I found out, I said to him, I said, "We need to talk." Turned out his plane didn't leave for many, many hours. It was the tail end of the road tour. Somebody else took the RV back to North Carolina. So we sat down and talked. He said, "This is what we can support. This is what we can't support publicly." He was an immense help in getting this thing done. So then, feeling like I had my ducks in a row, I emailed Barnhart. I said, "Okay, I got my ducks in a row. We're ready." And Barnhart emailed back and said, "Okay, write it." And that's how it happened.
That's like one of those, you asked for it, you got it. How do you go about writing a bill when you're an admin?
Yeah, I have no legal experience. And that was my first, shock and disbelief. I went, my God, I'm going to write this thing myself? Not knowing what else to do, I just pulled together. I mean, anybody who's been a network admin learns how to be resourceful, right?
Absolutely.
So I used my head, went out there and said, okay, there's going to be something somewhere that Walt Pennington wrote. He's an attorney. Presumably he knows something about what he's doing. So I found his DSSA bill and borrowed language from it that I thought would be useful. I borrowed from the Peruvian bill what I thought would be useful. I borrowed from the UK, that's not a bill, that's just a government policy, but I borrowed some wording from it that would be useful. And then, for a nice little touch, I went to the website of the so-called Initiative for Software Choice. Are you familiar with them?
They believe in one more time.
As long as you choose Microsoft.
Oh, yeah. The choice, you have to put choice in quotes.
Correct. I went to their website. I thought, okay, what exactly is it that they object to, and what can I put in this bill that they can't possibly object to? And some of the language from their website is actually in the bill. Then I realized that instead of talking about open source, we need to talk about open standards, because in a democracy, as Senator, my Spanish is not good. Would it be Villanueva, the senator in Peru that wrote the one that started all this?
Yes, he did.
Okay. As Senator Villanueva pointed out, there are certain things that are critical in a democracy about the permanence of public data and so forth. And I was looking at the news reports of things that are coming in the next versions of Windows and of Microsoft Office, and I said, you know, what we really need to be concentrating here on is not open source, but open standards. Nobody had written a legal definition for open standards. I got a hold of Bruce Perrin. He is real busy, real hard to get a hold of, but he sent me to a couple of pages, just PowerPoint slides or something like that, on his website. They're probably not really PowerPoint, but anyway, I got a feel for some ideas from him about open standards, and so there's an embodiment. This law is the first one that actually attempts to legally define open standards. It's interesting to see that the state of Texas has copied what I wrote. So that was also a thrill.
Almost identically.
Well, the first few paragraphs of it are word for word.
Yes, they are.
Out of one of the drafts that I sent to Representative Barnhart. It wasn't the draft that he eventually sent to Legislative Council, but it's word for word one of those drafts. Somebody leaked it. I got a pretty good idea who it is, and if he's listening tonight, thanks, Jeremy.
Jeremy.
Well, we won't mention any names.
Okay, we won't mention any names. But that's okay. You can mention names here. Very interesting. Now, I got my hands on the link that Cooper sent me, and got a copy of the bill from Texas that Doc sent me, and I immediately noticed that, man, this is the same thing. So
yeah,
it's good. And that is exactly the point of why Doc and I are really excited about not only having you, but we really want to develop this as a series of shows over the next couple of months and develop resources of putting these documents, getting copies of these documents on a lot of different file formats, and hopefully getting some cooperation from people like you who are the authors that can give us some footnoting as well on these documents, so that people who are out there and who want to go to their own state legislature have the tools to do so, at least reasonably easier. They don't have to start from scratch like you had to. So,
well, I didn't really start from scratch either. I just built on what Pennington did. He built on what Senator Villanueva did. It's like think it was Sir Isaac Newton.
We all stand on the shoulders
of
giants.
So, but still, I'm, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't pleased with myself. I'm very happy with what I've done, and I hopefully have done something that will be a very good thing. Hopefully will spread. You know, one state is an anomaly, but now we've got two states, Oregon and Texas, it's turning into a grass fire.
Actually, it's
terrific.
Three now.
Yeah. I'd like to add to that, Jeff, just for a quick second. Certainly, I would be more than willing to place a new section on our MWV Lugs' website that has a collection of documents that, you know, you indicated where people can go and kind of have a guide for what's going on here and also in Texas.
Don't forget to include Microsoft's link to the Microsoft site to get that link on there too, so they would be so that they can be absolutely pleased with what we're doing.
I'll do it. I will do it.
You know, and we can just make sure. Of course, then we expect a letter from the lawyers saying, "Please don't link to our site."
Right.
I would like to chime in here. I have some questions. What kind of arguments are you getting? I mean, has this been to the floor yet?
This has not yet been to the floor, but there are, several arguments. Kelly Worth and I spoke about, and one of those was the issue of training. You know, how long will it take IT departments, state IT departments, to train their individuals? And, you know, one of the things that we came up with was first of all, by the time we get done not paying the new licensing six license fees, you know, we can re-divert that money to training costs. And secondly,
part of the money.
absolutely. Part of the money. You know, and as it turns out, I've actually trained municipalities. I have experience in doing that, and I can tell you that, sometimes on the younger end of the spectrum and the older administrators have experience. I mean, these people are hungry, and a lot of times they come to you and say, look, we are tired of being chained in with the way that Microsoft wants us to do things. Give us a better way. Give us a freer way. Give us a way that we can customize to our particular environment. So what I find when I train individuals in municipalities is that it's almost as if we've liberated them, that we've given them something that they didn't have before, and we give them tools that just absolutely help them get their jobs done more quickly and more efficiently.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's also part of the issue.
What you must be getting a lot of resistance and to the bill itself, and what are the arguments for that? I mean, not the argument against open source, but the arguments against the bill. That's if we're going to fight these political battles for the rights to put this kind of bill into the law, into the state books, then we should be prepared to fight those battles. And what I'm interested in is what are those battles?
Clarify first, though, Ernie.
Mm-hmm.
The bill is an option to explore the alternative of open source. It is not a mandate. And
that's right.
So because
what are the arguments?
Because of the fact that it is not a mandate, then it makes the arguments even more interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's not a mandate. So again, yeah. What I can say,
I was actually in a mini debate with an individual through email, and one of the things that he said was that, generally to the effect of, look, you know, I'm not really sure that I'm comfortable forcing my government to consider, you know, alternative A, B, C, and D. I mean, I might as well make them consider, Swiss cheese for whatever you know you need to consider. And the response to that was look, you know, the reality is that when IT decision makers make decisions, a lot of times they'll make it on what everybody else is doing, or they'll make it on, you know, let's say persuasive contracting terms. There are a lot of reasons why IT managers and CIOs make the decisions that they do. And in private enterprise, that's fine. I mean, that's business. But when we're talking about taxpayer dollars, especially just after what we call Measure 28 just passed, which is
Actually, it didn't pass.
Go ahead.
Actually, it did not pass.
Measure 28 did not pass?
That's correct.
Measure 18?
No,
I'm not certain.
Measure 28. Tax increase. That failed.
No, I'm talking about the cuts across the board.
Oh, okay.
Measure 28. Right?
Okay.
Basically, seniors were cut. A lot of the seniors were cut for medical benefits. The governor was letting a lot of inmates out of jail. I mean, the news, the people on the Capitol steps, the news media was having a field day. You know, I mean, grandma was checking her blood pressure on the Capitol steps. It was incredible. And so when our current economic condition here in Oregon is very, we're in the dire straits. We definitely need to save money wherever we possibly can, and certainly Linux and open source is an excellent way to do that. And that's not news to anyone here. We've known that for a long time, and I think that legislators and business people are really starting to recognize that in a big way with this economy.
And this is almost a new industry argument. It's almost pointless to get ourselves trapped into the unending engagements with the us versus them religious debates between the Microsoft IT versus open source IT. We've got to convince legislators of not only the bottom line issue, but that this is a new industry. And you know, 5 years ago, nobody asked the question, how much is it going to cost me to teach all my employees how to use email?
Right.
No one asked that question. Okay? They knew they needed to do it. They knew that it would save them enormous amounts of money in the long run to convert from hard mail to email, and so they did it. And this is the same kind of new breaking technology approach that we have to argue. I think it's really perhaps probably our best avenue at getting to governments. But other than that, have you been gaining any groups of allies within the state government? Does it seem like you're making any progress at all, or just primarily negative? What is the status of the bill right now? You're still
absolutely. I can tell you that I have written every one of my representatives, both in the House and in the Senate, and I'll provide a link here where people at home can do that. It's actually a web link that you can fill out a form. But I actually took a step further and wrote to my Senate and House representatives, and every single one of them wrote back to me, either in support of this bill or at the very least indicating that they did know a lot about it but that they would investigate it further. They, I think, are aware that we can save a lot of money with this bill. They are aware that there certainly needs to be a change, as it will be too expensive to maintain their IT infrastructure at the cost as they are right now. And so, in fact, the meeting that I had with Kelly Wirth, it turns out Kelly Wirth is the House of Representatives representative in Corvallis, and she's also on the General Government Committee where this bill is going. It turns out that she just happens to have a master's degree in computer science. Just happened to work out that way.
That helps.
Yeah, right. And it was incredible. I mean, this individual, she is an absolutely sharp lady. She really listened to the arguments that we had. She posed some very piercing questions, and she said, you know, I'm really all over this. I think we can make a lot of progress on this bill, and I'm certainly encouraged. At one point, she said, I wish I had you when we were doing a particular integration. So she is definitely on board. Obviously, Representative Barnhart is on board. So at least in those two instances, along with the support that I have received from individuals emailing me indicating that, you know, I think this bill is a great idea, I really want to be involved, and the number of letters I understand that have been written to the representatives, there is certainly a thrust of support for this bill, and I don't see that thrust losing steam anytime soon. It just keeps building and building and building.
Can I say a couple of words here?
You sure can.
Okay. I haven't seen any significant opposition to the bill. I haven't seen any.
And this goes across partisan lines, I would hope.
No Republicans. The guy that introduced it is a Democrat. Republicans are interested in it because it's going to save the state money.
That's good.
A lot of them took a pledge that they wouldn't raise taxes, that they would balance the budget by cutting spending. It only takes 30 seconds of shaking a representative's hand in a hallway and saying, I estimate this thing's going to save the state somewhere between 20 and 30 million a year. And they've got the message. They don't care about the details. You know, they've got 1,000 other bills on their plate, and a 10-second message like, well, a 30-second message like that really does get through, and it's effective. I've been watching the ISC website, the Initiative for Software Choice. There's been nothing on there, and the last time I checked was a few days ago, so I can't speak for today, but last time I looked, there was nothing on there about it. We haven't seen or heard of any lobbying activity against it. Although, because even though we're next door to Washington, Microsoft has virtually no corporate presence in Oregon. Intel does, but Intel is officially neutral on this bill.
One of the things I've heard on these bills, one of the interesting facets of it, is the way that the traditional bidding procedures for government software excludes, by de facto excludes open or free software. And I don't think we've talked about that tonight, and maybe you'd like to touch that a little bit, because that's important.
Yes, there is someone who works for the state that contacted me and pointed Representative Barnhart and I to a regulation buried deep in the Oregon Revised Statute somewhere that states that any free software is a gift. Representative Barnhart is working on an amendment to the bill that will be offered at the committee hearing next week that will either repeal or modify that particular little statute to make it more appealing.
But what I've heard is that this, when you send out for bids, there is, like, for instance, this is in Doc's article, that there's no Apache Incorporated to get a bid from.
Well, I think I could be wrong, but I'm hoping that the bill's language will take care of that by saying that state agencies must consider the use of open source. That will percolate down to a set of administrative rules that will deal with it, and I think that the wording in the legislation is adequate to fix that.
But this is something that the other states should look for, though, is whether their procedures themselves are causing trouble for open source people, because
yeah.
You certainly don't want to lock out open source in government. I mean, that's
right.
not a good idea.
Yeah.
I agree with that, Arnie, that's for sure. When do you anticipate, or is there any word at all of this getting out of the, well, I presume, the committee stage right now?
There's a hearing scheduled for it next Thursday. Not day after tomorrow, but a week from day after tomorrow. That in itself is history-making, because this is not the first open-source bill to be introduced in a state legislature in the United States. Walt Pennington's bill in California was. But Walt Pennington's bill died in committee. It isn't going to go anywhere.
Yes.
This one has a committee hearing coming up. That's history right there. Now, as you heard Cooper explain, one of the committee members, the most tech-savvy committee member, is already on board. The committee chair just happens to be a sales rep for a company whose major product is a Linux-based web server. I don't think we're going to have any problems there. I mean, the guy asked for the bill. He wanted it in his committee. We've got a committee vice chair already on board. That's 3 out of the 7 on the committee. I don't think we're going to have a lot of trouble there. Now, assuming that it gets through the committee, it gets to the House floor. Representative Barnhart made a comment in an email a week or so ago that said, if it gets out of the committee, it's almost assured to pass the House. Then the process starts over in the Senate. Well, it just so happens, assuming it goes to the right committee in the Senate, that we've got a friendly committee chair over there, too. In fact, so friendly, that committee chair wanted us to introduce it in the Senate instead. So it's extremely rare for a bill to become law on the first attempt. I won't be surprised if it gets stopped somewhere, but my goodness, the chances of this thing actually getting through all the obstacles are pretty amazing.
What's the governor's opinion? How about the government?
No idea.
Governor?
Huh?
I can tell you that Governor Kulongoski is a, I would say, more business-oriented than Kitzhaber was. You know, if we step up to the plate and say we can save $20 to $30 million per year, you know, I would be hard pressed to say that he wouldn't be at least attentive to listening to this bill.
Well, if they're also pro business, then you really do have them, and not enough people are making the pro business argument by removing the money that they're saving from paying the Microsoft tax. A portion of that money is indeed going to have to be directed towards support and training.
Exactly, and guess
okay?
who gets that money?
And that
even
money can go to local business
exactly.
as opposed to Microsoft.
Exactly.
People who pay taxes within the state rather than Bill Gates' real estate.
You know, Jeff, you really touched on a point. I think that people nationwide, you know, especially a lot in the IT departments, are really feeling a resentment for finding their money getting trucked to Redmond all the time. Redmond and another one down in Texas. You know, and for what? Basically just to stay in business, essentially.
Yeah, for what exactly? Very little return on that money. To the public, very little return.
I know of no other part of government than education who could benefit from this the most. Because education is a huge user of technology.
Except that the K-12s in Oregon are already converting.
Well, not here in California yet, but I speak from experience. But and Jeff, I don't think that you have... Illinois has got the same type of problems California has. But in education, people are locked into Microsoft, especially in K-12.
Yep.
We had a situation.
The Apple dominance is gone.
We had a situation last April that actually made the national...
Ken, you're going to have to speak up some.
Oh, sorry. We had a situation last April that actually made the national... news. Microsoft announced to Portland Public Schools that they'd be doing a software audit, and this is right before the end of the school year. And then it said, oh, for you know, only $500,000 a year, we can see that that these audits are not a problem. Portland Public Schools went through the roof, and they went to a columnist with the Oregonian with the story. He printed the story, it made the wires, and it got national attention. A lot of school districts in Portland and around Portland started converting to Linux over the summer, and it's nothing but a success story down there. They're real happy with it.
Should have called the Attorney General to start invoking the RICO statutes.
Well, yeah, that sounds like protection money to me.
Yeah, it sure does to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a huge story in this area. I think that we have the K-12 LTSP project, which is an education project dedicated to providing, operating system and Linux computers to students as desktops. And that really got them fired up, and it really got them motivated. I think effectively it was a brochure that Microsoft had sent to the schools indicating that, you know, how wonderful it would be if you go ahead and convert all of your computers to Microsoft based computers. Oh, and by the way, here's a brochure from the BSA indicating that you may very well face an audit in the near future. And I think the school system just kind of said, you know, this is the busiest time of the year for us. I think it was spring at that time, mm-hmm. you know, when they're, you know, trying to prepare and do, you know, the test grades. And they just basically say, come get us. I mean, stand in line. We don't have the time or the money for this. We're too busy with everything else that's going on right now. Go ahead and do what you're going to do. And the Oregonian picked up on it, and so did the rest of the country. And I think that was a real, you know, a real turn in perception at that time, where it was kind of like, you know, there's a lot that's going on with the Microsoft licensing thing.
For those of you listening, the K-12 Linux Terminal Server Project is at www.k12os.org, and they also have K-12 Linux, which is a Linux kernel, and then the Linux Terminal Server Project, which is a rather thinner network that runs small workstations that log into a central server. And schools are using this across the nation and around the world, and you can see it at www.k12os.org.
And by the way, if you are in the Oregon area, just happen to be, or you have listeners in Oregon, I would kind of recommend taking a look at Riverdale High School. Call them and take a tour of their server facility. You will find that a real strong example of how thin client K-12 LTSP servers and clients can work. I mean, it's a great system. It runs fast. It's really capable, and the kids love it.
And it uses inexpensive hardware.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In fact, they're the people that developed K-12 LTSP with Riverdale High. The interesting thing is Riverdale is one of the richest school districts in the state, if not the richest. They didn't do this because they were strapped for money. They did this because they saw that Linux was superior. And when this whole audit thing happened with Microsoft last April, Riverdale School said, oh, we have a solution. All of a sudden, they were very popular around the state and around the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, gentlemen, we are up to the time. I've really enjoyed you coming on, talking not only about your bill for waking up the government in terms of their own purchasing, but it's also been interesting listening to an update on the Portland schools. Actually, we've been talking about the Portland school story for over a year, and so it's the Microsoft hired henchman at the BSA is one of our favorite all-time stories, and love to spread war stories. I've got a client here in Chicago that is potentially facing a $500,000 bill as well.
Mm.
It's all over. It's all over. It's very, very, very ugly, and it does nothing but help the cause of open source in the long run. So we'd
exactly.
probably be grateful to Microsoft for providing us with this wonderful tool to use against them. So, but again, thank you for coming on. We'd love to have you back on again as you get out of committee and you are approaching the time of the actual voting on the bill. Give us a holler. Maybe we can get some people to help you do some emailing of state congressmen and stuff like that. So,
I should mention the Oregon legislature. You can watch and listen to their sessions on the web. I don't have the URL in front of me, but you can get there through www.leg.or.us. I've got something wrong. LED dot STATE dot OR dot US, and then there's some pointers that you can follow. So you can watch the committee hearing online, and when it, assuming it comes to a floor vote, you can watch that online also.
Cool.
Also, gentlemen, I would like to let you know that I'm posting a link right now to the IRC that contains a link to where you can write to your legislator online. It's very, very easy. You can you simply put in your address. It automatically selects your representatives for you and sends an email to them instantly. Also, I would just like to let you guys know that, you know, we certainly are motivated. We're going to continue to be motivated. We are definitely going to do everything that we can to push this bill through the committee and on to the Senate floor, or excuse me, the House floor. You know, we're just going all out to get this done.
Hire teachers, not software audits.
Right, that's a good one.
That was Portland Public Schools' position. They said $500,000. That's 10 teaching positions.
How many students in the classroom if you may have to make that audit? How many students will they have to add to each classroom in a district to face that audit?
And that's one district, 10 teachers out of a district.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Oregon was looking to shorten its school year by 2 weeks as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, how many students do you add to each classroom? That's, you know, good metric. People understand that.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Okay, well, again, thank you, gentlemen, for coming on the show. We're looking forward to having you all back on. On behalf of the whole crew here, Doc, Arnie, Russ, Kevin, and myself, this has been the Tuesday edition of the Linux Show for March the 25th, 2003. We'll be back next week at the same time, and looking forward to bringing you another show, and we'll keep on, as long as the servers don't break, we'll continue to bring them to you every week at the same time. So we'll catch you all next week. Don't forget, come by our website, www.thelinuxshow.com. We need your support. You can go register our domain, go contact, email our DSL partner, or just sponsor a show, and we'll be thrilled to have your support to continue bringing the show to you. If it weren't for the listeners, the show would not exist. We've been bringing you the show now. This is our sixth year on the air. Yes, we do get vendor sponsor support, but the support of people on the community are just as important. So come on back next week, and we'll look forward to bringing you another show. We are out of here.
The home of sweet romance. It wins you at a glance. Gives happy feet a chance to dance.
Your form,
just like a clinging vine.
Your lips,
so warm and sweet as wine.
Your cheeks,
so soft and close to mine. Divine.